You are Locked On Pirates, your daily Pittsburgh Pirates podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody, and welcome back to Locked On Pirates today on Monday, June 14th, also known as Ethan Smith, host of Locked On Pirates, being in Pittsburgh week, as I will be in Pittsburgh this week, back in my wonderful hometown on vacation. So you're actually going to be probably getting a lot more content for me, as I'll be a lot more available. Also, to let you know, today's episode is brought to you by Locked On MLB. Of course, walking encyclopedia Paul Francis Sullivan gives you all of the sports news you need in under 20 minutes every single day about Major League Baseball and everything going on. And of course, on Mondays, we are always joined by the wonderful Gary Morgan. How are you doing today, Gary?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. I mean, I'm getting the hell out of town just as you're coming in. So.
Yeah, I know, right? It's very interesting. Gary leaves and I come in. So Pittsburgh's in a very interesting spot in terms of their people who cover their teams, because all of a sudden the host of Locked On Pirates is there and Bucks in the Basement is going to, I believe, Greensboro, right? I think we talked about this last week.
Yeah, I'll be down there. I'm not sure who I'm going to get to see yet, but we'll get down there anyway.
Yeah, of course. Well, speaking of the minor leagues, a new face will be in the minor leagues as probably the biggest story of the Pittsburgh Pirates this weekend, in the midst of being swept by the Milwaukee Brewers and arguably the worst series for them this year in terms of management and how they played. Mitch Keller was optioned to AAA, and this kind of, to me, came out of nowhere. I don't know if it was really something that was like expected, but what are your just first initial thoughts on what the Pirates could be thinking here with moving Keller down to AAA?
It seemed to be building for a while. You know, I think I had said to you last week, it kind of has to be on the table. You know, he's not really picking up what they're trying to get him to learn. And you can see the visible frustration on Jacob Stallings. You can see it in the dugout. He's just not picking up what they're trying to get him to do. And it could be a stuff thing. It could be that he needs to change his pitch mix. I mean, he doesn't have a viable changeup. That's really, really hard to get past. You don't have any kind of change of pace. He's not using his curveball. He's transitioned to a slider. All of his success in the minors was built on the success of his curveball and his fastball. You know, and there's no movement on his four-seamer. Got to do something there. You know, that's a lot of stuff to work on and a lot of stuff you don't want to work on at this level. So from that degree, I get it. You know, send him down, let him have a reset mentally, get him to fine-tune some things, see what happens.
And here's the deal with me is I agree 100% with everything you just said. Is this the beginning of the end of the like Mitch Keller era as a Pittsburgh Pirate is the biggest question to me, because going into this year, you looked at the rotation and now the whole thing has kind of shifted from Mitch Keller is the main guy to, is he really the main guy now with a guy like JT Brubaker, of course, taking a step forward. And then it also pales the question, is this another Tyler Glasnow situation where the Pirates just cannot develop Mitch Keller, or he just doesn't want to, either side of it, and then he gets offloaded, which I don't know who takes him. I mean, somebody probably would. And what happens if the Pirates do move on from him and he has success elsewhere?
Well, for one thing, they won't. For another, the fans will lose their mind and pretend that they were on the Mitch train the whole time, even though they weren't. Just like Glasnow, they weren't.
Yeah,
they were all very happy to have him move out of town, and you could find very few examples of people that actually thought Tyler Glasnow was going to ever figure it out here, and it was a major disaster that he got moved. It wasn't. Everyone was happy. Mm-hmm. It's just revisionist history.
Yes,
it's on their minds. Jacob Stallings just mentioned Tyler Glasnow's name in reference to Mitch Keller this weekend. Ben Cherington and Derek Shelton both did as well. They weren't even here for it. So, I mean, they're very much so thinking of that evolution and wanting to avoid that same mistake. And, you know, with Tyler, they would bring him up for 3-4 games, send him down for 2 or 3, bring him back up for 3 or 4. At least Mitch Kelly, they let him go straight till June. He struggled.
Yeah.
And now they send him down. Let's give it a little reset. Maybe he comes back after the All-Star break and starts doing what he's been working on. That's the hope. Are they going to flush him, though, after this? No. He's got options. Why would they do that? You know, it's really, is he worth a 40-man spot? Well, I can tell you he's more worth a 40-man spot than Kyle Keller. So,
yes. Yeah. By a long shot.
Right. People are just kind of a little bit too ahead of their skis on this one.
Yeah. And the thing is with Keller too is, I mean, most people assume that by now, and for all intents and purposes, yes, by now, for how much MLB experience he has, he should be taking steps forward. Nobody's not saying he hasn't taken steps forward. Me and you on these segments that we do every Monday have noticed, like, there have been times where Keller looks like he has the command on his fastball. He goes out there, throws a slider, throws a curveball, throws his pitch mix pretty well. There's times where he does do that. You see that in those good start versus bad start splits that they always like to bring up, where in the good starts he has a 2.75, in the bad starts he has an 11.31. One thing I think that gets very lost in translation about Mitch Keller in particular is he's still just 25.
Yep.
People, I think, forget to mention this. Like, yes, he should be a much better pitcher than he is right now, but he's also just still 25. He could virtually figure all this out in 2 or 3 years and be 27 or 28 and be in his prime.
Prime pitcher first. Look at Joe Musgrove, just really kind of started figuring it out last year, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, now he's in San Diego, and you know what he looks like? He looks like he did in Pittsburgh, where he has a really, really elite start, and then a really, really bad start, mm-hmm. and then a mediocre start. And it's because he has 5 pitches. If 3 or more of them are working, he's going to have a great outing. If less than 3 are working, he's going to stink. Mitch Keller's no different. If he's placing his fastball, he's probably going to do okay. If he's placing his slider, he's probably going to do all right. I mean, that's just the way it is. Young pitchers need to learn how to pitch. They get by on throwing a lot of the time until they get to the major leagues, and then you have to learn to pitch. It's a completely different skill set, one that they should do a much better job of teaching before they get here. But that's just the reality of the situation. It's a different level of player that you're facing, and it's just a different game. There's no way to fully prepare for it.
And I love this, whenever Jason Mackey talked to Derek Shelton about this, I love the quote that Derek Shelton gave about it, where he said, Mitch Keller is going to be a good major league pitcher when young players, and I like that he referred to him as a young player, young pitchers have struggles. It's our job to come up with a program and a plan to help them get back to the level and be successful at this level. That's what we're doing with Mitch. I love that. I love that he said that, because it's really, for me, is this is all in the grand scheme of things to maybe, one, let him get his confidence back. Because if he can go on the mound and have confidence like we've seen him do in the past and even this year, he's a very solid pitcher. There's no doubting that Mitch Keller does not have the stuff to be a solid major league pitcher in this league. There's not a lot of people, from what I see, that say he doesn't have the stuff to do it. It's more of just, can he command the fastball? Can he actually use his pitch mix, if I could actually get it out right? As you said before, pitching and throwing are a completely different story. And can he just not have that one bad inning every start? Most of the time.
Consistency too, because, you know, he comes out and you'll see him hit 97 on the gun. And then the next fastball he throws is 92.
Yeah.
And then the next one's maybe 96. And he sprays the ball around, and they're all on a flat plane. That anybody will tell you, if you throw, I don't care how fast you throw it, if there's no movement, it's going to get hit. Aroldis Chapman couldn't throw his 100-mile-an-hour fastball and have it not get smoked if it didn't have movement. Yeah, I mean, you have to move it. That's why Richard Rodriguez is successful with his 91-to-93-mile-an-hour fastball, because it has such sick movement on it. It's something that you can get away with once you introduce that. You can't get away with it no matter how fast you throw it. And that's something they're going to have to work on. Somebody that I was just talking to, Mitchell Nagy, was saying perhaps they should introduce a two-seamer, you know, give him something else that has a little bit of a different movement. That scares me a little bit with a guy that's already got control issues. It's almost like jumping out of the frying pan and into the fire, but, you know, they got to do something with him.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, the move that – or another part of the move that – sent Keller down was Jeff Hartlieb coming up, and for all intents and purposes in the game Sunday, he actually looked pretty good against Milwaukee in the little amount of time that he was on the mound, and I was very impressed with him, and I think we've talked about him before, but the thing that I'm liking is the Pirates have given themselves a ton of options in this bullpen at this point. Sam Howard has looked good. David Bednar has looked good. Now Jeff Hartlieb comes up. He looks pretty solid from coming back after the, I believe it was May 10th against the Reds, whenever he got beat up a little bit. Richard Rodriguez, who you mentioned earlier, I think could be a potential trade piece or somebody you keep just because of how good he's been. Kyle Crick also with that slider has looked really solid also.
Yes.
So it's very nice to see that even in the midst of Keller being optioned, they still have some good options in the bullpen. But really, the one name that spits out to me that is still very unfortunate with his injury is Miguel Yujiré, because this would be like the perfect time if he was healthy right now to have him in this rotation.
Yeah. I mean, and they've shut him down here until I believe it's the end of June. They didn't find any structural damage. So hopefully he's able to get back on the mound and just start throwing again. I don't see any way if he's healthy, he doesn't wind up in the rotation this season. And I also think Stephen Brault, I thought, was going to struggle to get back into the rotation. Man, they ought to throw him a parade when he gets off the IL, because
I mean
we can use his consistency like none other. I mean, at least you know what he's going to do. He may not be an ace, but he's going to give you 5-6 innings every time out and pretty consistently do so.
Yeah, and I mean, right now, as I mentioned, I believe on Twitter yesterday, the rotation is basically JT Brubaker, Chase Young, Will Crow, Chad Kuhl, and who am I forgetting? Tyler Anderson. Yeah, like based off the names I just mentioned, whenever Stephen Brault comes back, as you mentioned, you might be seeing banners saying thank you for coming back. Like it might be like a immaculate return for him, just because, again, you mentioned the consistency, and I think that's one thing that the Pirates have been missing in a lot of these close games is, yes, again, nobody's trying to fool anyone here. Me and Gary are not going to try to fool you into thinking the Pirates are a good team. But with the way that they have been pitching this year, they have been a slightly competitive team in most of the games they play. The only issue being, from what I see, is when you don't have that starting pitcher consistency, you can't really assume that your offense is going to be able to keep up with it when it hasn't been able to keep up with it for the most part all year.
Right. And then, you know, I think a lot of people thought things were going to start turning around as we got healthy. And you started getting Hayes back and Moran and Evans. I don't know. I think maybe we got a little bit too excited that the top five in the lineup looked okay, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Milwaukee's pitched all year, so I wasn't expecting them to go in there and beat them up. But when you score four runs, that's supposed to be enough with this team, with the way they're built. And it hasn't been. And it's been really frustrating. I think this series in particular was an example of the first example, really, I can say, where the coaching contributed to the losses big time.
Yes.
I didn't like how they handled the pitching staff. I didn't like how they handled even when they pinch hit for people. I mean, it just didn't make any sense. I questioned a lot of them, a lot of the decisions, and really not happy to see them be kind of indignant about the decisions they made.
Yeah, and I know I saw you on Twitter during the game in the final game against the Brewers where you mentioned about Will Crow, especially for some reason he started like he was pitching fine. I believe he retired 15 straight in a row at one point.
Yep.
And he just started like walking around the mound and all this other stuff. And then Shelton pulls him after this. And it was just a very puzzling move just because he looked really good. Like, yeah, of course he had the Daniel Vogelback double in the first, or what, the first inning that allowed them to score a run. But ever since that happened, he looked fine.
Let's back up to what really makes that move weird though, because he let him hit with the bases loaded with a one run lead in the inning before. Okay. So if he's on a short leash where one 10 pitch at bat gets him pulled, which is silly to begin with, but if he's on that short, that doesn't add up to me. You have to decide right then if you're going to have him on that kind of a watch where you're going to get somebody up in the bullpen immediately as soon as the inning starts, and that's when they started having Bednar throw. You don't have him hit there then.
No.
You try to get some runs. And they, you know, they chose not to do that. I guess you could go, oh, they have a short bench because of the Moran injury or whatever. But come on. This team ain't scoring runs. They haven't won in, what, today was 7 games in a row?
Yeah, season high 7 game losing streak.
You're up by 1. You got a chance to put a real dent in a team that, you know, you're in a position to beat. Sorry. Yeah. If you're going to pull that pitcher that quickly where one walk is enough to get him yanked, that's a mistake to me. Should have pinch hit for him right there. And that's not even getting into how silly it was that they pulled him after that.
Yeah. And I mean, I completely agree with you, especially in the fact that, yeah, you can bring up the fact that they had a short bench, but any bench player that they had is better than Will Crow batting with the bases loaded. I don't think anybody's arguing in that. Yeah. Like, I mean, no, I don't think anyone's arguing that. And even it, like, say, for example, too, you do pinch hit there, and so be it, you don't score a run out of it. Maybe you ground into a double play, or I think it was 2 outs, so maybe you ground out and the inning's over. But, okay, then you have a reliever come in to start the inning rather than Will Crow allow a base runner, and then this reliever has to come into the game and basically try to save his ass, rather than just starting the inning clean and doing what they normally do.
Well, and it's David Bednar too. He's been coming into situations like that. He's a strikeout guy. You expect him to get through that. It's not like the guy was at third base. He was at first.
Yeah.
Not concerned about the choice of reliever. Bednar's a good choice. He had a bad game. Hey, it happens. You know, I don't mind who he brought in. I'm more irritated that he gave him one at bat.
Yeah.
After hitting him. I'm sorry. No. You either pinch hit for him or you give him a little bit of a leash in the next inning. He left that game with 80-some pitches. No. Like, that all around bad move. And, you know, if he had pulled him and pinch hit for him and they don't score, do people complain that he had a short leash with Will Crow? Probably. But, I mean, if your plan was to go ahead and pull him that quickly, I'm sorry, you made a mistake, and a very visible one, and you need a better answer than we thought that at bat was stressful. I mean, that's silly.
Yeah, and for me too is like, obviously when you look at this team, just based off of record and what we've seen watching it, when it's already a bad team for all intents and purposes, you can't really afford to have bad management decisions to go along with it, because then things derail like they did in that inning, and then it results in the loss, obviously. And as you mentioned earlier, again, every series that we've seen this year, I think, has been a, like, mainly because of just talent versus talent, like, for the most part, from what I've seen. This series in particular was talent versus talent in terms of the Pirates not having as much, plus bad managerial decisions, because this really wasn't the only bad decision Shelton had this weekend.
No.
At all.
No, not at all. But the first game was a microcosm, really. It's one team can make a whole bunch of mistakes and survive it. The other team can make a bunch of mistakes and not survive it.
Yep.
I mean, that's really what happened. Pirates got that early run. They had no business really getting it. And they gave it right back with the same amount of mistakes. And you know, the Pirates can't afford that. They don't have that kind of room for error. And Milwaukee does. And they're not that great either. So it's not like, this isn't like we were playing the 27 Yankees. They're not good.
Speaking of the Yankees, they're not that great either right now, but I just always like to throw that in there. But looking at the Pirates matchups this week, of course, we have two series this week. We get Washington and the Indians. Of course, I will be in attendance to probably see that, or I will be in attendance to see that Saturday game. But this will be the first time the Pirates play against Josh Bell in Washington, which, good Lord, was that an amazing move by the Pirates to not keep him based on what he's been doing in Washington. I think Moran has definitely proved he was the better option of the two, just based on statistics alone, but also defensively and offensively. So this should be an interesting series for the Pirates in particular to me, just because the Nationals, a lot of people expected them, I think, to be a little bit better than they are. And this is one of those series, again, where the Pirates are kind of, I wouldn't say as good as the Nationals, but they're definitely in the ballpark of playing just about as good as they are.
I mean, the Nationals are obviously going to pitch their way into mediocrity most of the time, you know.
Yeah.
They have some names and good pitchers, but they just don't have enough offense. And Josh Bell was a big swing and miss. But, I mean, I think anybody in Pittsburgh, if they were being real with themselves, they knew he was going to be a swing and a miss for them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, despite Will Crow being mediocre at best, and I do think he's probably, at best, you know, a back end of the rotation guy, Eddie Yean might turn into something. I mean, he's a lottery chip. I like that acquisition, and more than anything, I think it was an improvement going to Moran regardless. So, I mean, yeah, the move was a good idea. I wish Moran could stay on the field, but, you know, not bad. Washington is a team they should beat, though. I mean, they realistically should. They have a better lineup. You know, Juan Soto and Brian Hayes cancel each other out probably, you know. And I'll take Reynolds and Frazier over anything they have. So
yeah,
they should compete in that series. As far as the Indians go, they're playing better than I think anybody thought they would, to be honest. And, you know, it doesn't hurt them. The Twins stink. And the Twins were supposed to be good. So, you know, but Kansas City's better than they were supposed to be. So, you know, the Indians' record's kind of surprising, actually. But they can pitch. They can pitch like crazy. So,
which is interesting when I always bring this up about the Indians, about like their pitching and how it's always good, is you look at who they've traded over like the past 3 years or 4 years. And it's pretty big names in that pitching department that they've traded away. But yet every single year they come into the season and they keep pace with the pitching that they usually have.
Yeah. Well, look at what they get back every time they trade one of those pitchers, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what you do. I mean, and that's what, if you're the Pirates, you have to hope they've done. You hope, hey, we just traded Jameson Taillon. He's got an ERA of, I think it's 5.4 or something for the Yankees right now. And, you know, underwhelming, not surprising coming back from two Tommy Johns, but the Pirates got back a haul of players. And one of them is Renzi Contreras, who could be a starter for the Pirates in a couple of years. So, you know, that's exactly how you have to manufacture a pitching staff when you just don't have the money to go out and buy it. So the Indians are a good model for that. That's what they've done.
Yeah. And I would say of those three major trades that were made in the offseason, I think it's pretty clear now. Well, I wouldn't say clear yet, but I would say it's pretty clear, or probably going to be the one that has the most potential to be the most equal trade between the two would be the Joe Musgrove trade, just because the Padres, of course, have gotten what they expected from Joe Musgrove. As you mentioned earlier, they didn't get, of course, the no-hitter, but they didn't get something exceptional like a Cy Young candidate Joe Musgrove or anything. But then you look at the haul the Pirates got back from that. Of course, that's a bunch of guys that you're just going to have to wait on pretty much. Bednar, of course, has been like the immediate guy, but Hudson Head could be a future outfielder for the Pirates. And there's a bunch of names in that trade that could all arguably be pretty big
Omar
guys.
Cruz, big lefty starter. They got some good pieces back. I mean, right now I would have to say on the surface, the best of the three is the Taillon deal. But, you know, I think Taillon probably had a little more upside potential than Musgrove. So I guess it kind of makes sense. And the Padres are insanely good at making trades, making it look like they're giving up a whole ton. And really, you haven't come anywhere close to their top 10 prospects. So, I think Hudson Head was kind of a coup to get him. I don't think they wanted to let him go. And I know other teams, including Tampa, were asking for him. So that's a good move.
Yeah, and I mean, for the most part, I think we've pretty much hit every big thing that happened this weekend about the Pirates and last week for the most part. Of course, Hayes is doing his thing. Adam Frazier is doing his thing as we pretty much wait patiently over this next month to see if Adam Frazier remains a Pirate this year, what they decide to do. Brian Reynolds, of course, has still been doing his thing also. Jacob Stallings, I mean, he had a home run yesterday. He's been flashing some offense every once in a while. What should we expect over this next month before the trade deadline?
After these next two series, I think these are the next two that are most winnable for the Pirates. Then they could go on a pretty bad stretch here, I think, until the All-Star break. They've got a lot of tough teams in their near future. So I would say make hay this week if you want to get the record up a little bit. But all in all, it doesn't really matter. It's more about individual progression. I want to keep seeing people improve. I want to start seeing some people I didn't expect to improve to start showing some improvement. Kevin Newman's a guy that I'd be more than happy to see him creep up around 240 at this point. I think his glove is more than acceptable. And if he can hit 240, he's not a bad player, you know, but 205 just isn't going to cut it.
Yeah. And going back to the matchups you brought up as well, the Pirates, of course, after the Nationals and Indians, will take on the White Sox, the Cardinals, the Rockies, the Brewers, the Braves. And then ironically, they will play 7 straight games against the New York Mets, which is very funny. Of course, 4 of those games coming before the All-Star break, the other 3 coming after. But any last thoughts on the Pirates going into this week? Of course, individually, like, of course, we want to see some things. Anything else that you'd like to see going into this week? Better managerial positions decisions, of course. But
really, I would just like to see them play the lineup full strength for a stretch of games. I understand they have scheduled days off for guys and everything, and I get that. I understand that's part of the game today. It's not the 70s anymore, but you have these guys all back finally off the IL. Let's play them a little bit, you know, let's let them gel together a little bit and see if they can get any kind of a rhythm going at the top of that lineup. Take advantage of what you have. And then I think make a decision on some other guys, you know, like let Jared Oliva get a little bit of soak time in AAA and then make a call on Tom. I mean, like, what's the guy giving you right now? You know, he's 27 years old. I'm sorry. Roll 5 guy, 27 years old. What's he going to give you?
Agreed. Ben Gamble had a good game yesterday, though, which was nice to see. So,
yeah, Ben Gamble's a nice fourth outfielder. I don't mind him being on the team at all. I don't question him at all. Tom, on the other hand, I'm sorry. For me, the last straw with him was you know, when he was up there hunting a walk instead of swinging the bat with the pitcher due up next when you needed a run. You know, that's a time and place thing, and you got to know better than that.
Oh, yeah. Of course, thank you, Gary, for always coming on Mondays. Of course, you guys can follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Pirates, or my personal Twitter at MVP underscore Ethan. Of course, my Los Angeles Clippers decide to give me more of a heart attack than this team does on a daily basis. And Gary, where can we find you on Twitter and all of your work as well?
On Twitter, you can find me, GaryMO2007. I talk all Pittsburgh sports, but mostly Pirates. I have a podcast on DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network called Gary Morgan's Fan Forum. Look it up on Google or whatever. It's free everywhere. And then I write about the Pirates on InsideTheBucksBasement.com.
Oh, yeah, of course. And Gary, you know, I'll see you next Monday. Of course, we'll see how things go. It should be an interesting week, especially with a series the Pirates should contend in. And then the Indian series is kind of a toss up. But I will see you again on Monday. Of course, I will see you guys all tomorrow. While you're listening to the podcast tomorrow, I'll probably be on my way to Pittsburgh as my mom wants to drive. So, Mom, if you're listening, I do not appreciate that decision, but it's okay. I understand. And thank you guys so much, and have a great rest of your Monday.